Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
We're starting this drawdown from a position of strength. Al-Qaeda is under more pressure than at any time since 9/11. Together with the Pakistanis, we have taken out more than half of Al-Qaeda's leadership. And thanks to our intelligence professionals and special forces, we killed Osama bin Laden, the only leader that Al-Qaeda had ever known.
In a way, the Obama speech on Afghanistan was as easy as 1, 2, 3. One, mission accomplished. The mission was denying Al-Qaeda a safe haven in Afghanistan. Done. We just heard that clip. Two, the civil war part is now up to Afghans. After 13 years of the Americans fighting the Taliban, you have to do this on your own by 2014. And three, money does matter. We spent $1 trillion on war. While we delay nation building at home, we need to prioritize our risks. Here is the president on that third point.
Over the last decade, we have spent $1 trillion on war at a time of rising debt and hard economic times. Now we must invest in America's greatest resource, our people. We must unleash innovation that creates new jobs and industries while living within our means. We must rebuild our infrastructure and find new and clean sources of energy. And most of all, after a decade of passionate debate, we must recapture the common purpose that we shared at the beginning of this time of war. For our nation draws strength from our differences. And when our union is strong, no hill is too steep. No horizon is beyond our reach. America, it is time to focus on nation building here at home.
As you know, we don't just do little sound bites here. There was about a minute in that excerpt from President Obama's Afghanistan speech, ending with a little sound bite that you've probably heard a million times this morning. It's time to do nation building at home. Let's talk about the Afghanistan speech with Robert Haddock from the website Small Wars Journal, which covers military around the world. Hi, Robert. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian. It's great to be here.
And listeners, time for your reactions. Did you hear what you hoped to hear from the president last night on Afghanistan? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post them to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Robert, you wrote us with some of your thoughts this morning, and they're really interesting. For example, the plan to remove 30,000 troops by next summer means the president doesn't perceive much difference, you say, in the risk between 100,000 troops and 70,000. And that's because the Taliban is just waiting us out either way?
Yes. Probably the most surprising thing in the president's speech was his stated intention to withdraw the second increment, the 23,000 in 2012, to do that by the summer, as he said. And that would be, you know, in the middle of the traditional summer fighting season in Afghanistan. And that would seem to, a lot of people would see that as taking something of a large military risk. President Obama discussed this, undoubtedly discussed this with his military advisors and came to a different conclusion about that. He either doesn't see it as much of a risk or is willing to take it. And I can discuss that more.
Yeah, go ahead, because one could ask, if they're going to pull out 10,000 troops by the end of this year and another 23,000 troops sometime next year, why does it have to be done by the summer rather than, say, November, December? Oh, there's an election November of next year.
Right. Well, President Obama may have concluded that that the conventional U.S. ground forces in Afghanistan don't actually provide much leverage over the military or political situation there. And the reason for that is because the Taliban have safe havens and sanctuaries in both Afghanistan and Pakistan, and they know that the U.S. military and the other coalition members are going to be leaving Afghanistan at some point, and they can spend as much time as they need, adjust their own tempo of operations in response to those developments that they see coming down the road.
Is that a far-fetched scenario, in your opinion?
Well, the point is that with the Taliban able to adjust how exposed or not exposed they are to U.S. firepower, Obama realizes that, and so therefore he doesn't see the presence of 70 or 100,000 as making that much difference in terms of the military or political situation in Afghanistan. But there are other things that will have leverage over the Taliban. Those include the buildup of Afghanistan's security forces, which will be there permanently after the U.S. leaves. Those will have leverage over the Taliban. And the other point of leverage that President Obama and the U.S. would like to build up is the ability to strike more effectively at those Taliban safe havens in Pakistan, which they're not able to do now. But the U.S. could increase its leverage in that regard by actually having a smaller footprint in Afghanistan.
Now, that is another fascinating element to me of your take on this. You wrote us that reducing U.S. troops in Afghanistan is supposed to increase American leverage over Pakistan. Here is the president speaking about that troubled nation.
Of course, our efforts must also address terrorist safe havens in Pakistan. No country is more endangered by the presence of violent extremists, which is why we will continue to press Pakistan to expand its participation in securing a more peaceful future for this war-torn region. We'll work with the Pakistani government to root out the cancer of violent extremism, and we will insist that it keeps its commitments. For there should be no doubt that so long as I am president, the United States will never tolerate a safe haven for those who aim to kill us. They cannot elude us, nor escape the justice they deserve.
The president on Pakistan last night. Robert, you believe drawing down U.S. troops in Afghanistan will increase leverage on Pakistan?
Yes, because large U.S. military presence in Afghanistan, Afghanistan's a landlocked country, the large military presence there has to be supplied. You know, military forces are voracious consumers of all kinds of expendables, food, fuel, parts, and so forth to keep them effective. And much of these, not all of these supplies, but a lot of these supplies have to come through Pakistan, which gives the Pakistani government leverage over the U.S. military operations and program in the region. And so the larger the U.S. force in Afghanistan, the more leverage Pakistan has. Smaller U.S. force in Afghanistan, the less dependent the United States is on the supply line through Pakistan, and the more leverage the United States then has over Pakistan.
Listeners, what did you think of the president's Afghan speech and his new Afghanistan policy? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post your comment to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Our guest is Robert Haddock from Small Wars Journal. And before we go to the phones, just about your site, the Small Wars Journal website says, small wars are operations undertaken under executive authority wherein military force is combined with diplomatic pressure in the internal or external affairs of another state whose government is unstable, inadequate, or unsatisfactory for the preservation of life and of such interests as are determined by the foreign policy of our nation. That comes from something called the Small Wars Manual of 1940. So what's the definition of your site? And most Americans may not think of Afghanistan as a small war.
Right. Well, Small Wars Journal is a great collection point for research and scholarly commentary on all things having to do with irregular warfare, counterinsurgency, emerging threats, modern conflict, and so forth. And we get a wide variety of debate and discussion going there from all different points of view, and there's a broad spectrum of people in government and the policy community have found it a great value to them.
Frank in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello. Yes, is it true that we're pulling 10,000 troops out and he surged 30,000 last year? So really he's not pulling anyone out because he's added more troops than Bush ever had there?
Well, the numbers are, the surge was about 33,000 and the pullout by next summer will be 33,000 out.
Right, but he's only guaranteeing the first 10,000, then it's always conditions on the ground. And also we went there because they supposedly harbored bin Laden, and then we found out that Pakistan harbored bin Laden, but now they're our friends, and we're still in Afghanistan killing people every day. And how many people have we killed since the beginning of this war? That's never been determined. And how many people are we killing every day for the same fact that we went there to get bin Laden? And now that's done. So what is happening? And he's supposed to be our peace president.
Well, the U.S. would say, he would say, that they're there at this point for the sake of the Afghan people to, assuming the mission is accomplished, to sufficiently root out the Al-Qaeda elements from there. And now they have
supposedly less than 100 people.
Right. So that's what they're saying, sort of declaring victory on that front. And the Obama
administration. They were there, the same thing when Bush was there. There was less than 100 Al Qaeda. This is like a big circle of wasting money and blaming our economy on that.
Well, Bush,
meanwhile, they're buying weapons from themselves and propping up Wall Street. So I don't understand how the $1 trillion, more than $1 trillion. We spend $1 trillion in Iraq. We're spending more than $1 trillion in these wars.
So the U.S. would say that they're going to draw down gradually to zero in 2014.
That's going to be zero. How many bases are going to be left there?
That's a good question, but I want to get their argument to you and let you argue against it.
Okay, great.
Which is that at this point, it's really a responsibility to the Afghan people, most of whom don't want to be overrun by the Taliban and go back to that government that was horrible before 2001. So they're giving the Afghan government army, bad as Karzai is, the ability to strengthen itself enough to fight the Taliban on its own without the U.S. And that's in the interest of the Afghan people. Do you reject the argument?
Why didn't we do that before 2001 when the terrible Taliban were in Washington and they were our friends because we wanted to have a pipeline?
Clearly because there was not enough U.S. self-interest.
Right.
But here they are.
Here they are. They've been there. They are them. A lot of places in Afghanistan don't even have electricity. We're bombing them with the most expensive weapons, and we're doing all kinds of surveillance and all this stuff, and we can't defeat these people in 11 years. And there's no end in sight. And what we're doing is the classic little kid thing by saying, oh, we won. Because all we really wanted to do was make it not a safe haven for terrorists. But how do we know that it's not a safe haven? It's a huge place. There's plenty of areas where somebody could hide.
Frank,
as we know. So that's a jive, a safe haven for terrorists. Oh, it's not, so we won.
So why do you surrender?
What
do you think the Obama administration stays for?
Say it again?
Why do you think they stay?
They stay because of the classic military-industrial complex, where they're making money, and without that money that's being bought and sold, what is the U.S. Exporting? When we're exporting all our jobs, and now we're exporting weapons. So if we're not in war, the Obama administration is going to be seen as weak. For what reason? This isn't a real war. It's a war on a concept. Terror is like It's something that people do. It's not like a country or a thing. So we have to be there with weapons and keep adding weapons and keep this war going. It's a very weak argument. I'm not a lawyer of any kind, or just paying a little bit of attention. Mm-hmm. It seems really ridiculous. And then,
Frank, I'm going to leave it there. I don't have time to go into another idea, but we've had you on for a while. I really, really appreciate
you,
your call. Call us again. So I don't know if you want to reflect on that one at all, Robert Haddock from Small Wars Journal.
Well, I'll just say that the killing of Osama bin Laden really freed up President Obama's authority to withdraw more and faster than he otherwise might have, and I think the president and his advisors see more of the problem being in Pakistan now than in Afghanistan, and the raid on Bin Laden's compound was very disruptive to the U.S.-Pakistani relationship. The Pakistanis warned that further such raids, would result in retaliation against us, and closing down the supply line through their country into Afghanistan, which they have done in the past for a few days at a time, when we've raided their territory in the past. So the moves that President Obama is making and announced through the speech, the aim of those moves ultimately, in my view, is to increase his flexibility, increase his options with respect to operations in Pakistan, which, as the caller mentioned, and a lot of other people agree, is where some of the bigger threats are.
So we're going to take a break and continue this in a minute. We'll take more of your phone calls and read more of your web comments, and we'll do some contrasting of the Obama approach and the Bush approach. One of the most sort of we'll play a clip of Obama that I think isn't getting enough attention. That's really at a conceptual level, showing a difference between him and Bush. We have a comment along these lines on our webpage, too. So we'll continue in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, as we play excerpts from and get your reactions to President Obama's Afghanistan speech last night. And Robert Haddock from the website Small Wars Journal is our guest. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And Nick in Cliffside Park wants to continue the conversation we were just having with the other caller, I think, about how much of a drawdown. Hi, Nick.
Hi, Brian. I hope your voice is feeling better soon.
Thank you. You may not hear me tomorrow.
Oh, my God. Anyway, I've read, I think Credo sent some email out, and that there's 140,000 private contractors, and the president mentioned nothing about that. And when you add to that number the fact that I heard Barney Frank yesterday talk about how the CIA estimates that there are only between 20 and 40,000 hardcore Taliban fighters total. And that includes Afghanistan and the ones that are hiding in Pakistan. So we have a country of I don't know how many millions of people with millions of able-bodied men, many of which are armed, that if we were to leave tomorrow, it is believed apparently that those 40,000 maximum Taliban would take over the whole country. And what it boils down to is you've got a small, relatively small group of people willing to fight to the death for their ideology. They're fanatics. They're religious fanatics. And they've got the whole country cowed. What we should be doing is getting the hell out of there. And if there aren't 300,000 or 400,000 Afghani men who are willing to put their lives on the line and fight like the Dickens to for democracy and decency in their country, we can't possibly win a guerrilla war in a country that large. It's like the British redcoats and the small number of American you know, revolutionaries. You know, they're walking around in the forest with the redcoats on, being sniped at.
So the difference, Nick, as I understand it, between the president and, say, John McCain or Lindsey Graham or maybe Petraeus, is how quickly they can get those 300,000 up to speed in terms of effectiveness to be able to keep those small number of fanatics at bay.
But Obama
says by 2014, and they say, well, maybe it'll take a few more years. You're saying even quicker, and they'll be ready enough?
I'm saying it's not a matter of how much money and how large those numbers are. For all we know, 10,000 of that 300,000 are implants from the Taliban who are volunteering, you know, to be
right.
That way when they're in, they could do something later. My point is that the people on our side in Afghanistan are on our side because of the money we're spending there. These are basically Afghani mercenaries. They don't have the fire in the belly to fight for freedom. It's all about drug lords and warlords and clans and who they owe loyalty to.
Right.
There is no Afghani national identity that really wants freedom. It's a war we cannot ever win in the conventional sense.
I'm going to leave it there. Get some other people on. But Robert Haddock, is that a common perception in Afghanistan?
Well, I think that President Obama wants to test that hypothesis, and that was part of what his speech was about. He and military, many of his military advisors, including we heard from Admiral Mullen, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff this morning, expressed concern about whether the Afghan government, population, and security forces have become too dependent upon the U.S. military forces in Afghanistan doing work that they should be doing for themselves.
And Nick talks about all the private contractors. Is it in any way a smokescreen withdrawal where the official U.S. servicemen and women come home, but American private contractors, you know, Blackwater kind of firms, actually take over the war?
I doubt that. That large number of contractors, those are people that are doing maintenance and support work on bases, you know, running the chow hall and things like that, driving supply trucks and what have you, and a lot of them are local Afghan citizens. I doubt that there'll be a secret army of mercenaries that will continue
right.
the war.
How about that numerical estimate? I have heard that too. Maybe there's only a few tens of thousands of people who are really willing to fight for the Taliban to impose that kind of horrible government from before 2001. And if they really do get 300,000, which is, I think, the number they're citing, Afghan military members up to speed sooner in the next couple of years, then there isn't really the Taliban threat that everybody likes to tell us there is. Truth to that?
Well, it is the real exit strategy for the United States and the coalition is to establish this competent and effective Afghan security forces, and there's a great deal of debate about how large they should be. I've written in the past comparing Afghanistan to Colombia. Colombia opted to have much smaller but much more elite and effective a national army to suppress the FARC insurgency there, and they've been very successful over the past decade with a smaller but more high quality counterinsurgency or military mm-hmm. force. And then there's the aspect of what's going to be the continuing cost of this large Afghan army and national police, and is the U.S. going to have to pay for that in perpetuity? So those are some issues that continue to be debated.
And here's that one last clip that I wanted to play at sort of the most conceptual level, in which I think the president in the speech really leaned toward our callers, Nick and Frank. And I wonder if you think this is the difference between the Bush approach to the post 9/11 world and the Obama or post Bush approach, which even some Republicans are signing on to as well. In 2005, Bush and Donald Rumsfeld had branded the war on Islamist terror the long war, that phrase, comparing it to the fight against communism that went on for decades. This clip from the speech last night seems to me to state the idea that the long war concept is gone. He even includes that phrase. This is about a minute long.
We've ended our combat mission in Iraq with 100,000 American troops already out of that country. And even as there will be dark days ahead in Afghanistan, the light of a secure peace can be seen in the distance. These long wars will come to a responsible end. As they do, we must learn their lessons. Already this decade of war has caused many to question the nature of America's engagement around the world. Some would have America retreat from our responsibility as an anchor of global security and embrace an isolation that ignores the very real threats that we face. Others would have America overextended, confronting every evil that can be found abroad. We must chart a more centered course. Like generations before, we must embrace America's singular role in the course of human events. But we must be as pragmatic as we are passionate, as strategic as we are resolute.
President Obama from last night. So Robert Haddock from Small Wars Journal, what did you think of that in the historical context of Bush and Rumsfeld's phrase, the long war?
Well, I think the biggest difference is that it's 6 years later from 2005, and a growing consensus is forming both across the political spectrum and among the electorate in the United States that they want to see a new approach taken on this, confronting the lingering problem of terrorism and Islamic radicalism and so forth. The last 6 years have been a learning experience, but also I think it's shown the limits of patience for the doctrine and approach that's been used thus far. And this is going to be a challenge for U.S. military planners to devise new doctrine for stabilization missions that will not require the heavy manpower intensive U.S. military footprint to achieve stability and these stabilization missions and requirements will arise again somewhere in the world, but and the U.S. will probably get drawn into another campaign like this, but there'll be political calls for taking a different approach than what was taken in the past decade.
Listeners, you can keep the conversation going about the Afghanistan war and President Obama's speech last night on our webpage, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show or on our politics website, itsafreecountry.org. It gets you to the same page. Robert Haddock from Small Wars Journal. Thanks a lot. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, more decisions out today from the U.S. Supreme Court on the second to last day of its term. We will take a look at what came down this morning and put this entire term of the Roberts Court with Elena Kagan, finishing her first year, in perspective with Jamie Floyd and Jeffrey Rosen. Stay with us. The Supreme Court's term next.